reframe and renew. And I think that we need to remember who and whose we are, so that it isn't all, it is, we are renewed in the spirit in this pause, that we can recall who we serve.
Let me welcome you to Mindful Leader. This is a podcast about leadership. This is Dennis Shaw. I'm the host. I am a retired elder in the Mountain Sky Conference of the United Methodist Church. I'm also retired from the United States military. I have a doctorate in church leadership, and leadership is something I have been interested in for a long time. I have focused on the observation, study, and trying to improve myself in it. And so we've got a podcast going on here where we talk about what it is to be a leader and how do you do it in a mindful fashion. Today's guest will be the three co-lay leaders of the Mountain Sky Conference, and I'll introduce them to all of you after the pause. Let me welcome you back to our podcast. I want to introduce our three guests. Let me first start off with Gayla Jo Slauson. Gayla Jo Slauson is a co-lay leader, and she worships at Crossroads United Methodist Church in Grand Junction, Colorado. Welcome, Gayla Jo. Our second guest is Barry Welliver. Barry worships at Hilltop United Methodist Church in Sandy, Utah. Welcome, Barry. Thank you for having said yes to this.
Just thanking you for welcoming me.
And our third guest is Nancy Flint, and she is the co-lay leader. She's a co-lay leader, and she worships at Columbia Falls United Methodist Church in Columbia Falls, Montana. Welcome to all three of you. Good morning. The podcast that we're doing here has focused the first four episodes on Mountain Sky Conference and leadership kinds of things. We had quite a bit of conversation about what's going on with disaffiliation. That is the separation of churches from the United Methodist Church. And Angela Thomas, who's the CFO, focused a little bit on that. Al Strauss focused in episode four about disaffiliation, and I will want to come back a little bit to some Al's comments, but we keep talking about the fact that we are hoping that we can, when we get past the disaffiliation, we're going to have a different climate, a different area, a different way of doing conference, a different way of being the conference. So that would suggest that leadership post-disaffiliation is going to be different. What does that mean? What might that mean? Barry, might I start that off with you? But the other two of you are certainly welcome to throw in comments as you hear them. Barry?
Sure. You know, it's been a long time since our pause, so to speak, with the COVID pandemic. And saying, you know, take a breath here, world. You know, we need to change things. And over that interim, you know, I think we've had these things boiling, like General Conference and disaffiliation in the background, kind of created a fearfulness in us. You know, it's kind of a detachment. And now coming out of that and moving into this post-disaffiliation conference, in particular, annual conference, I really do feel very energized by the fact that you know, there are so many new things on the horizon that are possibilities. You know, I've been reading about the Jewish people and their history, and it struck me just the classic, you know, starting with Father Abraham to all the way through the temple building and the like, and then disbursement. In a lot of ways, we've been that way. We've kind of lost a little bit of sight as to where we're going. And so that pause that I mentioned, you know, for me is kind of like that interim period where we should be rethinking what we're doing. So when we come out of this, when we unpause ourselves, I see in this new opening this ability to reframe, restructure what we're doing. So I'm quite frankly, quite energized by the fact that we have not so much a clean slate, but a new focus that says, you know, do we trust God? Do we trust God is going to be with us to lead us? So for me, that's the basic point.
I believe there are new things coming along. I do think they will have DNA from the past. So all the things that have been built before, it's kind of how God works, I think, when a baby is born. The DNA in that new child is from the parents who have lived and the ancestors who lived before that. And so all the things that have happened in the denomination and in our conference previously are still relevant in the sense of DNA, but it gets changed, it gets moved around and reformed or reorganized. But it's not like tearing things completely down and trying to start from scratch. I don't think God works that way. So I'm excited about that. So
go ahead, Nancy, please.
I'd like to jump in and say that one of the things that as Barry was speaking and Gayla Jo emphasized, Barry said, reconstruct, reframe, and renew. And I think that we need to remember who and whose we are. We are renewed in the spirit in this pause that we can recall who we serve.
Yeah.
So that R-E in front of all of what we are about in this next bit of time.
And R-E reminds us the fact that a lot of this stuff we're doing is not necessarily new. We're looking back to older roots and we stand on the shoulders of giants that have helped us get to a certain place. Is that sort of what you were driving at, Nancy?
Absolutely.
Okay. Anybody else want to add to this? I mean, I think we've got a real big challenge out there in front of us. I know that I worship on the East Coast. I worship the Baltimore Washington Conference Church, and out here, there's a number of people that are the disaffiliation is, as far as they're concerned, they're hoping that General Conference 24 is going to give them some new opportunities to disaffiliate in a different way. And so there's still a residual body left that wants to be gone, but doesn't feel like they can leave under the current set of circumstances. I'm not getting any sense of that going on in Mountain Sky. Are either any of you having any sense that there's people out there that are hoping that that they'll get a better chance to leave in 24 than they've gotten now?
I don't think so. No, I think, as far as our conference, I believe that, you know, we are pretty much parsed at this point. But you know, the other thing that occurs to me is, struggles. And oftentimes I say we need to put some of these weights down in order to move forward. And, yeah. You know, we talk about
like that
stress. We talk about struggle, and they are real things. I don't mean to minimize them by any means, but the opportunity to say how we move forward, I think the time is now to focus on it.
One of the conversations I've had in the first four episodes has been about this issue of the conference should be here to serve the local church. And that's something that we say, that the conference says from a leadership perspective, both from the staff and the volunteers, but also it's the fact that sometimes there are things that pop up that makes you think the other way around, that we seem to see evidence of the fact that there's this subtle element of the fact that there's this mindset that perhaps the local church is here to serve the conference. And I categorically reject that. But at the end of the day, it's easy to say conference is here to serve the local church. It's much harder to implement that. And I think one of the ways we see that is in this issue sometimes of how things emerge from a bottom up, which we say that we want to do. We want to have leadership and the direction and vision emerge from a bottom up kind of men's mindset. But so often we get directions from a top down perspective. At least that's my impression. Gayla Jo, do you share my impression of how that sometimes works itself out?
I think so. I think in the past, our denomination, and perhaps as part of being the denomination, our conference has treated local churches sort of like it's a franchise and we're all sort of the same. We're following the same processes. We're following the same rules. and maybe the clergy are sort of part of the conference, and we plug them in based on various things, not always tied to the local community needs. And the bottom up is interesting because I do see across the jurisdiction and the conference more, especially after disaffiliations, I think we'll see more contextualization. I think we'll see more regionalization, more efforts to not use the same matrix or matrices or measurements for everyone. We will instead be looking at what these various churches, or I hesitate to say church, but what these local groups need based on their very specific, unique qualities. So we're not cloning anybody. We're not making a template and saying everybody follows this template. We're saying each group is going to be unique. And without the context, there will be no ministry. I think in the past that wasn't true. We all had these community churches. They were built. They followed the same set of rules. They followed the same kind of way of getting their clergy. I think that's changing. And I think that's good, because I think if you want bottom up, you've got to have contextualization.
Mm-hmm. I would add to that that, you know, I think we've done a poor job of asking the church, as Gayla Jo has said in our past laity sessions, tell me what you want, what you really, really want, because that's really the core of engagement. And I think for what it's worth, churches have not been forthcoming about what they really, really want. I think of Hilltop, for instance. We had the same posture. The conference wasn't serving us, so to speak. Yet when we ventured on a new establishing a new church start and realized the resources of the conference to help us, it was an eye-opener for the church, for the congregation, to say, I didn't realize this resource existed, and we're taking advantage of it, and how very thankful we are for that. So yeah, I think oftentimes the complaint of the local church is maybe not as warranted as it seems. You know, it's just people not used to asking for what they want or seeing the resources. But I do think, conversely, the conference needs to be a lot more transparent about going after and asking the question, tell us what you need, what you really, really need.
Nancy, do you have anything you want to add to any of that?
Asking the right questions, being open to listening, and encouraging churches to really listen deeply to what the community and the surrounding needs in their mission field is critical. Yeah. And sometimes think you want is the bling when you really want the substance. And so I think the shaping of people, the shaping of ourselves as God's people to really want the connection with God and with our neighbor. And we are so often distracted by it.
Lovett Weems, Doug Powell, who now leads the Lewis Center for Leadership at Wesley Seminary, their website on leadership talks about the very issue. Sometimes it isn't the answers, it's the questions. It's getting the right question, getting the right question formulated. And sometimes that really is my own observation is that I'm not sure that we do a particularly good job training clergy in order to be able to move into a different context. I think way too often we get into a mindset of, well, this worked in Colorado Springs, so why can't it work in Missoula? And I think the reason is because Colorado Springs is very different than Missoula. My own observation was when I went from Colorado Springs to Sandy, Utah, I moved 500 miles, but the nature of the congregation where I was in Colorado Springs and the nature of the congregation in Utah was just mind-boggling. It was like we were in a very different theological location. And I really had to continue, going back to Gayla Jo's observation, the context in Utah was very different than the context in Colorado Springs, and it just called for different leadership leadership expectations. But Gayla, Joe, and I have had a conversation a couple of times over this issue about top-down, bottom-up. We can say bottom-up, but it's easier to come down and say top-down and say, we're going to do it this way. But it can be very frustrating at the same level. It requires you to listen very carefully. And listening is important, an important element of that. Anybody want to add anything else to this conversation, this one?
Well, that said, but I do think that, you know, the work that Nancy's doing with the Connectional Task
yes.
Force is important only because, not only, but specifically because it's hearing things that maybe are wants or needs that maybe can be slightly refined and adjusted. You know, sometimes, as she's pointed out, the bling seems the thing, but it's not the thing. So the conferences
I like that.
Function, I think, should help should help focus, you know, what is the real thing that we're looking for? Yeah.
Yeah. Which I think I heard Gayla Joe espousing that as well. So I'm going to move on to the next one, has to do with values. Is that okay? In the fourth podcast, when I was talking with Al Strauss, who was the leader of the Disaffiliation Task Force, he commented about one of the things that he had to basically do as the creation of this task force, get it going, was he had to figure out what the disaffiliation values, the values around disaffiliation is probably a better way to say it, were for the Mountain Sky Conference, and how he had to re-ask that question and go back out and ask it again and again and again until he got to a place where he thinks that he heard it that way, and he was able then to incorporate that into the overall process. We say we have values. We've incorporated those as part of our plan of union in 2018, the creation of the Mountain Sky Conference. Is it maybe a time for us to re-examine those values, or how do we go about doing that? Nancy? I think this might dovetail a little bit in what you're doing with the Connectional Task Force. Do you have any observation about values?
Well, first of all, I think that the culture you talked about, the culture between the two places that you served in ministry were very different. And so I think the two conferences coming together in a union in some ways need to listen deeply to what the scope of our conference now is. And yeah. and thinking about those in terms of values, our values are, I think, underlying all of what we do are probably pretty similar. How we express and live into those values in that context that Gayla Joe talks about, it is maybe expressed in a different way. So I think if we ask the questions and get down to knowing what our values are, then we can, as Bishop Karen would is emphasizing in this annual conference, take my hand and we'll go forward. That's a sort of a John Wesley thing. If our values are the same, then we can take one another's hands. Our hearts are in the same place and we can go forth. So I think rooting out and having conversations, what really are our values? Even going back to the phrase that Barry quoted of Gayla Joe, what do you really, really want? What are our basic values? When we see that we are one, we can move forward in ministry. And so I think we do need to reestablish those core values. We've been in an us, as Al had mentioned in your last podcast, sort of an us and them situation.
Yeah. And to be clear, the us versus them, I can't speak for the Legacy Yellowstone, But that us versus them precedes the merger, precedes the creation of the new conference. There has been an us versus them since I've been a volunteer at the conference on conference teams. It's not new. And I wonder how much of it is part of the human condition, where it's just part of who we are. We sort of look at it that way. But yeah, I think trying to figure that out. You made a comment, though, and I go back to the issue of listening. And one quote that came back to me, comes back to me over and over and over again, is way too often we listen in order to reply rather than to truly understand. And I think, so what we need, part of mindful leadership includes this element of empathy. And part of the way to be truly empathetic is to truly listen to somebody. That's not just Dennis Shaw. That's Dietrich Bonhoeffer saying that in Letters and Papers from Prison. Is to say how important it is for us to listen. So part of how I determine the value, I understand the value of Columbia Falls, is by letting Columbia Falls tell me what their values are, rather than me telling what their values should be. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think when you ask the question, what are your values, but then to let people wrestle with, well, what is my value? Let a community wrestle with, what are our values? What do we really, when it comes really down to, what would you... What would you not want to, what would compel you to stop doing something because of a change? Yeah. And to be honest with yourself about that. And the community needs to be honest with themselves about what's the game breaker for me? What's the game breaker for my relationship with God? I'm working on the Connections Task Force. I'm working on the Connections Task Force and helping to lead the work in the conference of that, because we have seemed to have lost the ability to be in relationship with one another on the same page. And that does not mean that we need to be like-minded in lockstep, but going forth, how do we resource one another and use the richness of our diversity to be in right relationship in our communities and in our world.
Yeah. Gayla Jo, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I tuned in with one of the things you said, Dennis, about human nature, because I think we all want others to see the world in the same way we do. Yeah. And if they don't, it makes us anxious. And so don't you think that's part of the trust feeling, that we don't trust that if we listen and hear values from a different group, like let's say urban and rural churches, hear something different in what they think is valued, that they're afraid of those values. And so they don't want to really listen because they might hear something they don't really want to hear.
It's interesting you say that, Gayla Jo. I was thinking of this idea, we keep saying what you want, what you really, really want, when it's in fact what God wants.
Yeah.
But hearing the different values and acknowledging God wants the urban church to do this, God wants the rural church to do that, and meshing those together and making them one vision is really the challenge before us. You know, we can't have one set of standards of values. We have to have a broad enough approach that says that God is moving the whole church forward, the whole conference forward. And so consequently, we have to be attuned to giving up a little, like ours isn't the most important task, for instance. I think of, you know, again, going back to this study I've been doing about the Jewish people, you know, we come all the way down to Jesus, and he was doing just that. He says, you're asking for the wrong things. He continually said, you want a Messiah who's a warrior. I'm not a warrior. It's written in the book. Look at it, you know, read it. Be of God's mind, be of God's heart. You know, I think those are things that are the values that we need focus on.
Yeah, I'm preaching on July 16th, and my theme is humility. It's the parable on the publican and the Pharisee out of Luke, and my focus is going to be on the theme of humility. And this is not an isolated passage. That part of the overall theme, both of the Hebrew Bible and the Greek Bible, the Old Testament and the New Testament, is that humility is a very strong element of that.
Yeah.
But that haven't been said. Go ahead. Go ahead, Barry.
Is this thought that it's a process that takes a long time. You know, you were at Hilltop when we wrote a vision. It takes a long time, and the conference needs to do this continuously. And it needs to be a concerted effort. And so I agree that we need a concerted effort in our conference to do just that.
Yeah, I confession to people listening and to the two of you. I mean, Barry was my lay leader for a good part of my time when I was at Hilltop in Sandy, Utah. And he came to me one day and said, we need a new vision statement. We need to cast a new vision statement. So I went, oh, okay. All right. Whatever you say. And we put the thing together, and my objective was to kill the vision statement. It was to get in the room and write the thing and spend 6 weeks at it and be done with it. It took us 13 months. It took us 13 months, and it was a very productive 13 months. But it was like for a person who saw this as something that we were going to go into the room and spend 4 to 6 weeks and come out with an answer. It was a little frustrating in the beginning, because I really thought we could get to a quicker answer. And the answer was we had to be prepared to accept it in God's time, not Dennis Shaw's time. And that can be tough on the ego, you know, that I'm that I had to let God be in charge, not me. What were you going to say, Nancy?
Well, I just think about that as the Connections Task Force. You know, we jumped into that work and then wondered where do we need to start? How do we need to start this work? And the start has been, it's been pretty slow. Yeah. We don't have any quick answers. But what we did formulate were four questions that we asked of a number of people around the conference. And we got some answers, but what I think we're finding out is we didn't even have the right questions to ask to begin the conversation of what people want, where people are hurting, what are the needs to be in good connections around the conference and outside the conference. You know, how are all those things working? So we are just in an exploring time of really listening deeply and trying to hear what people are saying. And think we're getting a good sample of that, of how to move forward, how to strengthen the good things that we already have in place. And to be honest with ourselves and say, oh, this isn't working. So we need to change to connect to contextualize how we ask for information, how we ask for reporting, and engaging the rural church and the urban church, because it's very different.
Yeah, I have been listening to voices outside the podcast that they really are in the fast solution mode on the task force you're on. And my own experience at Hilltop with Barry is that I'm not sure there is a fast solution on this. So yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. Kayla, Joe, please.
Yeah. I'd like to say something along that same line. So I taught systems development for years. And one of the things that happens is right away when students are given a system development task is they want to create a brand new system sort of from scratch. They just want to start and build it. And you ask them, well, how does the old system work and why did it work that way? And they say, oh, I don't know, you know, or who knows, or that was a silly way to do things. And then what we always did was we said, you have to start over. Until you understand why things were done the way they were, you can't build a system that's going to be any better. You can't do anything new that's going to work. So it's kind of like you have a tree in your yard and you have a branch that dies and, you know, you're trying to figure out what to do. If you're going to just, you know, chop the tree down and plant a sapling, you're not going to accomplish what you want to accomplish. That sapling, if there's not enough water to the tree or whatever, if you haven't solved why the old system wasn't working, really understood why it was done that way, you're never going to be able to build a new system that works any better. And so I think we often try to rush it, just like Nancy's saying, just like you're saying, Barry, that we try to hurry things along and we don't let God work through a system that really is going to be an improvement. It's going to solve the problems.
Yeah. One of the things I have been asking everybody, talking to everybody about, it's the actor's studio question. And on the actor's studio, the host would ask 10 questions of every guest. I'm only asking one question, and it probably wasn't one of the 10 questions the actor's studio host would ask. But the question I'm asking is sort of one of your own awareness, your own process awareness, your own development. And it has to do, what is it you know now about being a lay leader, co-lay leader, that you wish you had known when you took the gig, whenever you took the gig? Nancy, could I start with you? What is it you know now about being a co-lay leader that you wish you had known when you got started being a co-lay leader?
Well, it was interesting. I'm going to start with a little quip because of how I became a conference co-lay leader. And I go back to a mantra that my grandmother used to say when invited to do most anything, but quite often it was to go shopping in the next larger town and asked, do you want to go? And she would respond, yes, there might be a time when I can't. And so that yes, that saying yes in my life, not comparing going shopping with being a conference co-leader, but the opportunity to say yes, to grow in a different way. But what did I not know was just what kind of growth that I would experience, what kind of opportunities that I'd have. In these past two and a half years of what didn't I know before I started was what didn't I avail myself of the opportunities to have access to all the information and I don't know, it just seems like the conference changed and I stepped into a time when there was a lot of change, but it's for me is an excitement. There isn't really anything that I wished I knew before I stepped into the role. It's been an open book and a great opportunity to see change, to be moved by change, to inquire about how we might make a difference in in this coming together as a new conference.
Well, so I personally was touched in your little dialogue there about how much you believe you were changed. Is that how much you had to be open to the possibility of change? I think that's what I heard you focus on.
I think that's what I'm reaching for to explain is I didn't have any big expectations. I came into it saying, well, why not? And all of a sudden I'm put in a situation where I've opened myself to be in a situation where change is all about me. We've had the experience of learning new things. What I wished I would have known was how to be more tech savvy, be on Zoom, to be aware. But these last 2.5 years has just sort of been one adaptation of an opportunity after another.
Wow.
It's been an exciting ride to be on what I feel like the cusp of trying to figure things out.
I like that. I like that. Gayla Jo, same question to you. What do you think you know now that you sort of wish you had known back when you took the gig?
I think my thoughts of what I wish I would have known have to do with expectations. You know, like Nancy, I've been surprised by the opportunities. So when I first started, I thought that I needed to rein myself in and say, okay, I've got to stay in my lane. I've got to be careful not to step on toes. And what I've found is that people are sort of waiting for you as a co-leader to step up and do some stuff and not be so worried about that you might happen to do or say something that might not quite be the right thing. And so if I could tell my earlier self something different, I would say, don't worry so much about that. You know, you're here, you're working. And I've developed these relationships with Nancy and Barry. You know, I consider them dear friends. And of course, they live in different places, but we've developed relationship working together, but also with some of the conference staff and different people where you didn't get a chance to know them otherwise. And you know, gradually you work out how you work with each other's personalities. And that's kind of how I feel.
Yeah. Part of the preacher joke is that sometimes you get up and you hear somebody go preach it, and then you make another quote, preach it, another quote, preach it. And then obviously you make a fourth quote, they go, now you're meddling. and you sometimes you live in concern of this idea of now you're meddling. How do you make that distinction? Frankly, sometimes when people say now you're meddling, actually that is the voice of God speaking at that point, because they don't want to change. Barry, sure. Where do you think you might go back and tell the Barry Welliver of a couple of years ago? I've done this gig a couple of years. I wish you would. I want you to know this. What is the thing that you might tell that Barry Welliver?
Well, Dennis, of course, you know, I'm an engineer, so I always offer read the manual. And in fact, I was a nerd enough when I was chair of council to pass out Christmas gifts of guides for leadership positions in the church. And so, you know, when I started this gig, so to speak, it was like I forgot to take my own advice, read the manual, see what the context is. But like Gayla Jo, I think... probably the thing I would say to myself is, don't be afraid to ask naive questions. Don't be afraid to speak to powerful people about simple things, about concepts that I need to know to do my job better. So yeah, that would be the lesson that I would give myself. Don't be bashful. If you are called upon to lead, you need to be, honest, you need to be humble, you need to be vulnerable. And so asking humble questions and making yourself fragile, I think, would be good advice for my former self.
The first, you two ladies, the first year I was at Hilltop in 2012 to 2013, my standard observation when somebody would come to me with this blinding flash of the obvious that they thought was so obvious, I would just sort of step back and I would go, let's just pretend I've only been here for 90 days and help me understand why that's important. But anyway.
So Dennis, can I add one thing, or are you on a roll? One of the things that Gayla Jo mentioned and Barry mentioned is getting to know one another and getting to know people, getting to know the staff people, getting to know Barry and Gayla Jo leads to a trust and situation. What would I like to know is to not be afraid to approach any person. The hierarchy in our conference can seem daunting, and what I experience is the humanness and the genuineness of each person when we get to know one another. And so to not be afraid of position and role, but to really come at it as a genuine opportunity to get to know each person as a beloved person that is doing their best.
Yeah.
And to work at that from a trust level. And that opens many, many doors.
I like that. That's good.
One thing that, you know, you're talking about spiritual mindfulness, and the one thing that occurs to me that's important is being fit spiritually. And so you have been a marathon runner. I've been a marathon runner. You know, it takes training. Yeah. And so I think it's important that leaders take that on as their challenge, daily challenge, quite frankly. We not put that to the side, but we really intentionally model that for ourselves and our own needs, but for others. So being spiritually fit, I think, is a really healthy attitude in this position that we find ourselves in.
I think that's a topic for another podcast. I like that. That's good. Nancy, are there any observations?
I can't top that.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I want to thank again the three co-lay leaders, Nancy, Barry, and Gayla Jo, for giving of their time so unselfishly and sharing with us their observations about what's going on in the Mountain Sky Conference. Trust me, I will have them back, and we will have them again, and we will discuss other ideas, other thoughts, other things that need to be shared out there. My guest next week will be my guest next week will be Bruce Berger and Angela Thomas, and they're going to talk to us a little bit about the fiscal year 24 budget for the Mountain Sky Conference. If you have questions that you'd like to give to them, don't hesitate to send me a note at Dennis, D-E-N-N-I-S, at Mantuan, mantuan.org. Other than that, thank you very much for your time today, and hope you had a good time listening and learned some things about how to be a leader, particularly in the Mountain Sky Conference. Peace be with you, and God bless you. Thank you for your time today.